Hello and welcome to a series of specials of my podcast Helium Talk. I call them the isolation episodes, and for these I'm speaking with people from the art world about the current situation we're all facing these days. I just want to know how artists and gallerists from different countries are dealing with being locked down. I want to apologize if some of these podcasts do not have the same high audio quality as my studio recordings, but reaching out to people around the world online also means very different technical circumstances for some of the interviews. For today's episode, I spoke with Rachel McCulley and Jordi Kerwick, two Australian artists who are currently far away from home. Where are you right now? Where do I find you?
We are in the south of France, in our living room, and we live near a town called Albi, which is kind of near Toulouse.
And how did you get to France? I mean, we are from Melbourne, Australia, right?
Yes. Yeah.
A long way away. We I don't know. We've always thought about moving here, and just decided to do it one day. And within a few months, we were here. I had to find the right house. We had no idea about this region, so we just got really lucky to discover how awesome it was when we arrived. But yeah, we're loving it here.
Our French is pretty dicey, though.
Yeah, our French is terrible.
It's not great.
Do you understand people around you, and is that very difficult now, or?
No more than usual.
Probably less difficult because we don't have to talk to anyone outside our house.
Yeah.
It's not helping our French progress. But it's hard to follow local news, so we rely on friends that we know here to inform us as needed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's good. We're getting there. It's really slow. It's a slow it's a slow process. It's really slow. Really slow.
So did you at any point did you think about going back to Australia now for this time, or you're just hanging in there in France?
It did cross my mind. I'm more of a panicker. And I think the immediate knee-jerk reaction was that, you know, I felt the need to be close to family back home. Mm-hmm. I don't know what difference it would make anyway. It's just more of a comfort thing, I think.
Yeah.
But, no, we're going to be hanging in there here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah. So it would be probably a little bit difficult to get back to Australia right now anyway, right?
I think difficult and risky, and we've got nowhere to live. Our house in Australia is rented out.
But we, I guess if we went home, then we couldn't get back in.
Yeah, the boys are at school here. Yeah. Like when, I don't know when school's going to go back, but
yeah,
I think it'll probably create more issues than.
So we have two kids now with you, and
yes, just gone to sleep.
Yeah, we've got two boys: one that just turned 6, and a crazy 3-year-old.
All right.
Yeah.
So how do your day? How are your days looking like now?
Awful. Like just you know.
Not awful.
No, not awful. It's just it's different because you know we've got a homeschool and yeah, I don't know. It's just
every day is the same.
Yeah,
now,
it's just Groundhog Day. You know, you do the same. You know, same drawing, same collage. So do some art stuff, do some exercise. Rach, it does more the teaching, the sort of reading and writing. The French. So Sunny was getting somewhere. He didn't speak. Well, the boys don't speak French either. But they go to French school. And Sunny was making some progress. Our eldest, and then sort of this happened. So. His progress will have slowed down significantly. But doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I mean, yeah. What can you do? Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. That's true. Yeah. So
we live in a place that has a big property, so at least the kids have a lot of room to go and run around. It could be much worse.
Yeah, being in a large city right now is probably But did you have any shows cancelled, exhibitions cancelled now that that time?
So many.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're super busy now, but I mean,
yeah.
What kind of shows were cancelled for you?
So I had, well, not cancelled, but I had a solo at my gallery in Sydney, Pier Mark. So that was scheduled to open on Thursday. So we had to move that online instead. So in terms of the timing, I'd already sent everything down there. So we just proceeded and made it a more virtual experience. Geordie and I were also planning to do the Auckland Art Fair together with Pier Mark, and that was happening in April, so that got cancelled as well. And Geordie, you had more as well.
Yeah, I had a book launch at the LA Art Book Fair with Patu Gallery, and then a solo that was opening first week of next month. And then, yeah, the Auckland Art Fair, and what else? Something else. Group show in London and a group show in Dusseldorf, actually. Yeah. So, So, yeah, they're all done, which is a bit sad, but it's not the end of the world. It's just,
Where was that in Dusseldorf? Which gallery?
Setara.
Okay.
So that would have been cool, but it doesn't matter.
I think you're currently now in the position that you can still produce artwork. Is the artwork already, you know, your work is, or more importantly, very interesting, because I haven't spoken to any artist yet who had a virtual opening. So how was that? How did that go?
I guess it was just, it was all kind of hitting in Australia on like the day or two around the opening. So it wasn't, I think the communication was a bit unclear about what was meant to be open and not open. And so it was kind of going to be open until some days before. And then we thought that people could still attend, but suddenly that got shut down like on the day as well. So essentially it was just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, just putting things on the website. And I just comped a video together because that was the only thing I could think of to show people what it looked like, because at least they got to install it. So I was happy that that could happen still. I think after you work at something for so long, the idea of it not even going on the walls was a bit devastating. So I was happy that they could do that for me at least.
So did they do some kind of virtual or streaming or so for the opening, or
not really, because I don't think they could even go there.
Legally they weren't supposed to be there.
Okay. not even the owners of the gallery.
They did a video talk.
Non-essential movement, you know. It's supposed to be, I think it's supposed to be all hunkered down. So okay. Poor Rach, I feel sorry for her. I mean, it sucks, but
I'll get over it. There was a couple of days of mourning, but then had to accept the way it is.
Yeah, it's something we all have to accept. I'm speaking now with a lot of artists about this, you know, because they, you know, basically everyone has kind of some kind of show canceled or has no real way now to sell artwork, you know. Not even the galleries can sell work. I mean, with our place, we've canceled, postponed our exhibition that was supposed to open this week. April 3 is on Friday, I think. We're planning on doing something virtual instead, you know. But that's also, like, I think a lot of, I mean, most galleries that I know are trying to do this now. And even though we all have, we're supposed to have time, more time now. But it's when you have a family, when you have kids, I think that's out of the window. Because, I mean, when my wife and I, we're also kind of trying to separate out times, you know, when do you, you know, take care of our youngest and vice versa. So do your kids let you paint, or?
We've always painted around each other. Like it generally is chaotic, you know, in the house. They didn't start school until September. So until then we did have them with us 24/7. And so we've always painted with them around. We had a few months of experiencing what it's like with them at school, and wow.
Yeah, it's nice. You're slightly more efficient, and get a lot more done. But yeah, we're used to the chaos. We started really painting more seriously amongst two dogs and two boys, and you know, so that chaotic house is nothing that we can't grapple with in terms of making work. We've got a studio across the road, which we haven't used in the last couple of months much because it's been too cold. But now that the weather's changing, it's nice to get over there, a bit of a sanctuary, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And we should be able to tag team some more, I think.
Yeah.
Where one of us can get out of the house for a while and maintain sanity. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really weird because I really, really want to make new work. Yeah. But I also can't be bothered. You know, because I think when you've made all this work for all these shows, and then so you've got this excess, you know, you've got stock coming out of your backside, which is, you know, annoying and purposefully made. And then I've got all these other ideas, but I guess with not knowing what's going to happen, you kind of, yeah, I'm excited to work and equally I'm happy to do nothing as well. So if you can get 2 or 3 hours in a day, then that's fine. And at least you feel like you've done something. But, I don't know. It's a weird feeling. It's really, really weird because you've made the work for your last show and you're ready for the evolution after that work, but there's no telling when you're actually going to be able to show that work or make that work or if there's any point in making that work for a while. So, I don't know. It's a strange feeling. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's for me, it's also, I mean, the ideas that I had before, I threw a lot of them out of the window. I'm thinking about something completely different to do right now, but not because of, I don't want to do art that is necessarily related to the corona crisis or anything. Oh. It's just, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like, I don't know. I want to do those things, so I'm really hesitant in actually starting with stuff. I don't know. I mean, your show in Sydney that is very distinct, and you know, sort of kind of the drawings that you're doing for that, or you've done for that. Are you continuing this now? Are you, I don't know, looking for, you know, sort of is the whole situation influencing your work that sort of you're going to do now next?
I think so I'll continue doing the text work that was predominantly what made up the show, and it's a really good time, I think, to continue that work. I can kind of treat it as a bit of a visual diary, I suppose. I can get thoughts out there, and I recently launched the True Selves Project, where I'm getting people to anonymously submit their confessions and true thoughts, and it's great timing for that, actually, because I'm getting some excellent ideas. So I'll continue doing the text work, definitely, and I'm also just playing around with other stuff, revisiting old ideas. I think in stressful situations I tend to go back to more minimalist and abstract work, and so I'm playing around with some stuff there, and also the materials. I'm just conscious of using I don't know how long the canvas supplier will be open for, so I'm being careful with how many I use and just going to paper at the moment, which I haven't really worked on before. So just playing with new things, and so much downtime, I guess you can afford to just play and make mistakes, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's also not going to be like once this is over and we're going to wake up again, or humanity is going to wake up again, that everybody's going to start buying our artworks again. You know, I think there will be some time when people will not necessarily buy any artwork of anyone. Unless it's a good investment, you know. But
yeah. I think Germany's Germany's got a good arts grant package they're rolling out. What artists? I read a headline the other day. 90 million euros for German artists.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they're trying to support the arts and culture, because that's pretty, you know, sort of all have been hit pretty harsh. I mean, not just artists who paint and or, you know, sculptors or whatever, but it's also like the whole entertainment industry, musicians, all the shows are canceled. And, you know, these days you don't make money from Spotify, you make money from playing gigs, you know. So. Right. all this is out of the window now. So yeah, I think we have a pretty comprehensive package. We have to see how this rolls out. It's just about to start to roll out, and it's something that, I don't know, you have to see how long it actually lasts for you know, the whole thing, to see whether it's actually, you know, sort of helping artists in the long run or not. But I think there would be, I mean, I don't know, I've been in this business for some time, and the last big crisis that we had, not as dramatic as now because only financially related, was 2008. The time between 2008 and 2012 was very, very rough, extremely rough. For me, for example, for many galleries who don't exist anymore, and that's also means that there's, you know, less place for artists to show and to sell their work. So there will definitely be a lot of damage. Sure about that. But you know, as you said, Jordi, what can you do? You just, you know, I mean, you can only continue to paint and see what's happening. I think.
Yeah, it's completely uncontrollable. There's nothing you can do to influence it either way. So, you know, I guess stressing about it it's not necessarily going to help you, unfortunately. No. But yeah, I'm sure, I mean, I think everyone will have their little meltdowns around what's going to happen and, you know, what's going to happen with their practice. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe mine hasn't come yet. Yeah, maybe my meltdown it hasn't come yet. It'll come eventually. But yeah. So, but it'd be interesting to see what people roll out and how much it influences their work over the next 12 to 24 months. You know, the idea around mortality and lack of freedom, you know, I guess in some ways everyone knows that they've bunkered down for a good cause. You know, you should be self-isolating and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But still, it still feels like someone's still telling you you can't do this and you can't do that. So, yeah, it's a lack of choice. It is the most interesting sort of restriction to grapple with, I think. It's just, even just to go for a drive would be incredible. Yeah, going for a drive would be beautiful. Just get a bit of green and see the hills and, yeah, but can't do that.
Yeah, for a while. But even, I mean, here in Germany, people can still go outside, I mean, in groups of two maximum or with your family and try to, you know, sort of stay away from everyone else. It's kind of a weird feeling. I mean, when you go through Hamburg and some parts have to continue just like normal, you know, so people still have to buy groceries and things like that. But going to supermarkets have become a weird thing. I went to... This last Friday, I went to a supermarket, and for the first time, I thought I'd wear a mask, which Germans don't probably like to do, and gloves, which I, you know, sort of, I'm a craftsman, I'm an artist, I have all this stuff lying around, I don't need to buy masks or anything, I have them in my workshop, and gloves as well. So I went to the supermarket, and I was the only one with a mask. people were still looking kind of strange at me, and when I was thinking, yeah, maybe you should look thankful a little bit, because I'm not necessarily protecting myself, I'm trying to protect everybody else, you know.
That's so right. Yeah.
I think that would be a change that has to come, you know.
That's the visual, it's the shock of seeing such precautions being made. So yeah, we've got some big spray masks, some huge, big sort of Darth Vader looking things.
Yeah.
I'm like, I do kind of want to wear it.
Just to shock.
Yeah. Just to shock, yeah. But yeah, like going to the supermarket now, it's like playing dodgeball. It's like kind of, you know, you got to kind of keep away from everyone, and you don't want to be there longer than you should be. And then you feel bad for the people who have to work, you know. I feel really shitty for them, legitimately feel really bad, you know, that they're sort of in there amongst it. And also very thankful, obviously. It's just a really, really weird time. And I think Rach and I said today, we were just talking about what do you want to make sure, like, you know, you don't regret over this period. You know, I wish we had all that downtime. I wish I would have done X, or I wish I would have done Y. So I think after sort of now, what are we, 2 weeks in?
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks in. Now that 2 weeks have passed, we'll probably start thinking about that more so than art and work. I guess. So for us to be less work and more sort of
I think just settling into it and using the time to just be together more. And, you know, the kids are at school now, so we're not going to get this time back with them, I guess, as children, and just making time to really play with them and, mm-hmm. you know, be at their level and, yeah, have some fun together.
Mm-hmm. So as an abedir, like you're in, as an artist couple, you're in that situation that you're usually working, I don't know, from home or from studio most of the time anyway, so you're used to having a lot of time with each other.
Yeah,
it's not much of a change for us, to be honest.
Yeah, to be completely honest, George, this feels like nothing for me. Yeah. I mean, I was born for this sort of isolation. It doesn't make any it hasn't impacted me apart from having to drop the kids at school. For me, there is basically, it's 95% the same.
Yeah. Jordy's basically thriving. This is his absolute dream, being a hermit. He loves it.
It's no problem for me. I mean, even because we're out in the country, we order paints online, you know, a lot of a lot of the things we order and paint suppliers are online. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of almost normal for me.
I'm bloody sick of cooking though.
Yeah. It'll be nice to go out for dinner or
takeaway even. Anything.
So for me, Rach, it's pretty normal, mate, to be honest. It's pretty standard. I'm still, you know, teasing, and Rach, I actually just end up talking most of the time. So 90% of dialogue is well, I guess it's sort of a sort of monologue, really.
He does. Jordy just talks dribble all day.
Yeah.
All day.
It's me talking and Rachel just listening or pretending to listen. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's about the times we're in or just.
No. Just.
No.
All about anything that pops into his head or singing and politics. teasing our children. So he's basically one of the children that I have to say, please stop teasing this, you know. It's to Jordy just as much.
Yeah. I always thought, firstly, when I got married, that you sort of grow up 20%, you know, to become more of a man, and that didn't really happen. And then when you have a child, you double that again, you know, so you're real, you know, you're a serious, real kind of person. And that hasn't happened. Now we're two kids, two dogs in, and I'm still, I don't think it's going to happen for me, man. I think I'm always going to be. I think I'm always going to be a child. Which is fine and disappointing, but yeah.
Why is it disappointing? I mean,
I don't know. Because look at my dad. You know, my dad's kind of he's a pretty serious kind of cat and was responsible and I think I'm responsible, but like I just creep into responsible. You know, like I just make the threshold of being called responsible. I don't know.
So your wife is the only real adult in the house.
It feels that way.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. I've had to become the more responsible one. I'm not naturally that way inclined either, but one of us had to step up.
Well, it's good teamwork then. I mean, it's just like, I don't know.
So we've like tried to put a routine together for the kids. You know, I drew up this, you know, our day, it starts at this time, you have free time, and then we're going to do this lesson and then this lesson. And out of 2 weeks, I think we've been able to stick to it maybe 2 days. So
three.
Was it three? I don't even know.
Three we're structured just, school days.
We're hopeless at routine.
Yeah,
but that's a challenge anyway. I mean, my son Maxim, our youngest, we built. I spend more time here at the wood shop building stuff with him together than actually working on paintings. But we built a chalkboard so that we can actually write the daily plan on there. So it took us 2 days to build that. That was like, you know, and now everything that's on that is just like today. And that's it. Nothing else.
Best intention.
He'll never get that at school, you know, that time with his dad, learning a craft, having like one-on-one time. That's invaluable, I think. I can't teach my boys anything like that. I can teach them how to change a light globe, maybe. So I think, I think that's invaluable, George, to be honest, like that spending that time with your son and showing him how to build something.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, I don't know how the situation is in France, but here the school gives so much material for the kids to learn. They could actually sit 5 hours a day just sitting down doing stuff for the school, but we're not teachers, you know? I mean, we understand most of it.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, isn't that great? Some of these things I was never interested in when I was at school, so I'm not interested in it now, you know? So
yeah.
I'm not very helpful there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the first week, it felt like the school was more intent on giving us things to teach. And the second week, it already felt like they pulled back.
No, it's back. Mm-hmm. Got more emails coming through. Oh, we just haven't looked at them yet.
Apologies, I'm wrong. Everything's still back at normal. Yeah, it's hard also for us because you know, obviously, everything's in French and we don't speak. As I said, our capacity is getting better. Our ability is getting better, but it's still, I mean, we're learning, for God's sake. We're teaching our kids, you know, in French. So
I actually did teach for 1 year. I trained as a teacher. I went back to uni and I did a graduate diploma in teaching for primary school. And I only did it for 1 year because I realized I didn't have much patience. But I had thought about doing homeschooling when we first moved here. Mm-hmm. And so I actually got some supplies and I'd started playing around and I'm thankful I decided to send them to school in the end. But it's handy now, so I can still do activities with them and pull out some things. It has no routine or agenda. I just kind of decide spur of the moment what we're going to do and they're kind of enjoying it. I think they like that. Yeah, they like their little home class.
Yeah, because it's about a quarter of the time it should be.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a very relaxed environment.
It is.
And my son hates it, but still. I mean, it's my wife's taking care of most of the schooling too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she's also an academic, so and I've never learned anything. So for me, it's probably harder to sit down and do math.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, getting a little bit about to your art. I mean, did you when you met, you both were art students, or you both were already artists, or you're, you know, sort of you influenced each other in your art, or is it just like a pure coincidence that you were an artist couple?
Yeah, we definitely didn't start out that way. So, I always did art through school and at university. But I didn't pursue it directly after uni. Well, I kind of stayed in creative fields, but I decided to do more of the other side, more of the business admin and go in that direction. I just dabbled over the years, but nothing serious. Mm-hmm. And Geordie, so we knew each other when we were young, like in high school, and then reconnected when we were 29, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And after we got together, Geordie started dabbling.
Yeah. Work was really stressful. So Rach bought me some paints and I started making just awful paintings, really, really bad.
What were you working? What was it?
We had a few businesses, mainly in education. And we worked with a couple of gyms and yeah, sort of like a jack of all trades, mostly marketing and branding, and cut a very, very long story short, it all failed miserably, and in the end, I had to turn to art, because it was actually, you know, helping support our family more so than the business in the end, so by virtue of extreme failure. Within my professional career, I was able to become an artist, which I think it usually goes the other way. Usually it's having a go at art and then, you know, if it doesn't work, succumbing to sort of 9 to 5. But, yeah, it worked. It was the opposite for me.
It's funny. Geordie's got, I reckon, some kind of addictive personality, like not with everything, but with the art. So he went so heavily into it. So I used to think that I had, you know, a bit of knowledge about art and I was starting to educate him. And then suddenly it's basically like he's done a fine arts degree within 6 months. Like the amount of learning that he did, amount of reading and the practice. So he was just painting and drawing every day, every night, fully into it, weren't you?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I still, it's weird. It's weird now because it's my job, and in my spare time when I'm relaxing, I still want to paint. You know, it's my hobby and my job. So, yeah, it's weird, Rach was doing some textile art, and then
I started weaving when after I had my first son. Mm-hmm. So I was on maternity leave at the time, and just struggling with anxiety and boredom, and just like the whole change of life and pace. I guess my role in the world, and decided to start weaving and really got into that at the same time as Geordie started the painting. So we kind of started the creative journey at the same time, but it took me a couple of years to go back to painting, and that was probably at Geordie's prodding. He kept telling me, pick up the brush, and I think I was just being stubborn. And I finally did, but it was more just to do a study for my textile work. And then once I did that, I dropped the textiles and I kept going with the paints. And I think we do probably influence each other a bit. I don't know how conscious it is, but by working together, you know, we're listening to the same stuff, we're using the same paint supplies, we're seeing each other's work and different palettes that we're using. And I think we bounce off each other a bit there.
Just the process of making is dramatically different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally, yeah. We're very, very different in our practice.
Yeah.
The results are also different. I mean, you're both working in an abstract way, in a way, you know, but not really. You know, sort of. As I look at it, and I think it works well together for me. When I've seen Geordie's work first, you know, through Rune Christensen, who did this group show at the gallery and who said, well, let's invite Geordie. And then after a while, I found your work and online, I mean, through Geordie, I think, through Instagram and stuff. And I never thought it's very similar, but I thought it's very interesting to see how when you're a couple and you're living together and working together, something that I can't even imagine. You know, my wife is a psychotherapist. You know, so she's studying psychology, and I'm very thankful for that. I mean, not because of the psychology, but just because she's doing something different. She can't help me. it's very interesting. It's actually very interesting. So, Sazid, have you ever done a show together? As a couple, is that something that you think could work? Or
yeah, I'd love to.
We did in Portugal with and I'm going to say it wrong. I always say it wrong.
Andingen.
Yeah. with Highland from there. So we went and stayed at the Holdout, the space,
the residency, has,
the residency in Alcobaça, which is. Mm-hmm. Amazing place.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, it was sensational.
Yeah, and so we showed our work there together. And
we're supposed to do in Auckland the art fair coming up. There's supposed to be a booth just with our work together, which would be great, but obviously not meant to be. But yeah, I'd love to. I feel like I'd like to do a show with Rachel more than Rachel likes to do with me.
That's not true.
Yeah, I feel, you know, I don't know. I just think.
Geordie kept trying to make me do text pieces based on the text that he comes up with.
Yes. I spend half my day trying to think of text, but then I tell Rach, and if I tell her, I know she won't use them anyway. So either way, it's like pointless. But I want to do something with Rach for sure. I like the idea of doing something biggish, you know, making some big work, having less pieces and just some big, bold work, you know, like three pieces each in a show. Or something like that, and just making big and loud and you know, I guess Rach makes them thought provoking, and you know, to a degree, I think my work would just sort of support Rach's. So Rach would take, I feel like her work would take the lead, and then I would support it.
Oh, thanks, Joe.
That's my way of thinking. I have no idea. That's just me. You know, I guess, you know, beauty of art's interpretational, and people might see it otherwise. But I don't know. I'd love to do something.
I mean, Rachel's work shows a little bit more structure than, you know, it looks a little bit more structured than yours probably, you know.
Yeah.
Yours Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, if you see the way that we work, it's hysterically different.
Yeah.
Geordie really is quite raw in his approach and very fluid, you know, with how it turns out. And I am completely control freak, and I'm trying to stop that. I think that's been a great influence that Geordie's had. Like sometimes, you know, I'd look at a painting, he'll ask me, what do you think of this? And I look at it and I'm like, oh. Like to me, I'm like, oh, it's just, it's not balanced. Oh, it's kind of hurting me. Oh God. And then I sit on it a little bit longer. I'm like, no, actually I love it. You know, just the surprise elements, like, no, it shouldn't work, but it really does. And so it's making me, I guess, be more open to, you know, if it's palette or just, you know, it doesn't have to go exactly there. Stop being a freak.
But then, I mean, when you said you just, I mean, it's you didn't start out as artists. Over the recent few years, your work, I mean, you have been a kind of a success story in a way. You have a lot of exhibitions and a lot of, only I think end of last year I had somebody from New York calling me about if I have any work of yours left, and we went through, because he was so confused because there's so much work on Artsy and most of it is without price, which is usually people, galleries think is a smart move to do, not mentioning the price because it might go up and then they have the other price in there. I think there's a lot of speculation in that. Is that something that you've expected at some point? Is it something that you understand how it works? Especially in regards to, I mean, we had this discussion, you know, sort of when I tried to find out how much are your pieces worth now, you know, I talked with Rasmus, who's exhibiting you in Aalborg. He had an idea. Then you see on Artsy, you see galleries going and taking off the prices and saying contact for price. So making a mystery out of it. How do you, how did that happen that, you know, sort of people start to go crazy about this, and B, how is it, how do you deal with that? Because I mean, this is probably not the reason why you started to paint.
No. So I think, so no, it was never planned. It was never planned, to answer your question really simply. It was just more so around, making stuff that I really like making and trying to perfect something that I know can never be perfected, in that, you know, just a really basic still life. You'll never perfect it. You know, you can make 4 million, it'll never be perfect, so to speak. So being comfortable knowing that I could always just make these flowers and always try to make them better, and knowing that they'll always be interesting and there's always enough options in them, enough to continue to make a career, you know, basing myself almost, Not intentionally branding myself, but knowing that I could come back to these flowers that were interesting enough that people would want to maybe own one, you know, like if they thought it was worthy. In terms of the pricing and stuff, man, I actually, it's funny you say that, because I don't have that kind of transparency around with a lot of the stuff on Artsy. I wouldn't even know what's on Artsy. I guess you've got to sort of just, when you work with the gallery, you've just got to take a real back step, you know, a back seat. That's their level of expertise, and I guess, you know, I don't want to step in their feet when it comes to them showing pricing or not showing pricing. I don't have a strong opinion on either, rightfully or wrongfully, I don't know. But the other problem is also, I also think there's a huge issue with currency. Currency is a real bummer, you know, in terms of when stocks and markets dip. You know, the Australian dollar traditionally gets pummeled by the pound. The pound battles the euro pretty well. US is always around the euro. The Japanese yen. I mean, it's trying to keep up with the world's really hard. I think that's the challenge with galleries, is trying to stay across the currency. Trying not to outprice yourself. I think a lot of people, I'm in a really weird space when that I don't know if everyone buys my work because they like it or whether they think it's going to be an investment. I have no idea. I mean, these are things you never really know. So if there's a currency dip, you don't want to be cheaper than everyone else. You don't want to be more expensive because you know that then that's going to be creating more market competition. But to be honest, mate, these are all assumptions that I make and I know how to make off the back of a previous career, you know, like understanding market value. But the amount of discussions I've had with galleries around this, I could, you know, I could count on one hand, basically zero. It's a weird thing. It's an incredibly humbling thing. I'll never, ever, ever stop appreciating anyone who deems my work, something I'd like to buy. I really appreciate that.
I think it's a good approach from your side if you say, well, I'm trying to keep this transparent, but how should you? You know, if you have how many galleries are working with you now? A lot.
I don't know. I probably work consistently with four or five. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is amazing. And they're all kind of different, which is really cool as well. I guess strategically from a business perspective, I always think it's good to spread your risk and try to work in different continents, you know, mm-hmm. Asia, Australasia, Europe, US, UK. And then in the event that a catastrophe like now happens, you might be able to still generate some income in different markets. So, I've worked with some brilliant galleries, all really great people. As I said, they're all really different as well. They're all like very distinctly different. That's
you're very hands off in terms of managing your own pricing between the galleries.
Very hands off. Yeah. No, very hands off. I mean, I don't. I don't know. I don't. It's hard, mate, with the whole market value thing. Like, I mean, now the big question is what is anything worth at the moment? Which I can't answer. It's just be interesting to see how quickly galleries and artists can pivot to find a way to make art available in a way that sees a gallery survive, it sees a collector feel like they've had a win and keeps putting food on the table for an artist. And I kind of think that works on paper is a good way to keep people engaged, you know, a lower price point. Mm-hmm. They're still getting something kind of cool. Bizarrely, inquiries haven't slowed down at all, but I think there's that retail therapy. I think people will just feel better for inquiring about work. And they're not going to buy anything because I totally understand why they wouldn't anyway because it's a crazy time. Yeah. But just an inquiring, scratches that itch a little bit. So I think it'll bounce back. I think things will be okay eventually. But for now, I think it's
just don't know how long you have to batten. I think you got to
stay proactive, and I think works on paper. Trying to work with galleries, you don't want to see any gallery go down. The overheads again. Being a failed businessman, I know exactly how it feels to have fixed overheads. Governments still aren't clear around rent reductions or forgiveness when it comes to actually paying rent at all. Staff are being laid off. You know, it's a bloody awful situation for everyone. Like nobody's winning. Nobody's winning. So I think coming up with a model like, you know, works on paper, something really basic like that, where the gallery can win, the artist can win, and the collector can win, is something that needs to be thoroughly considered and driven, particularly in a time like this. No one wants to go and drop 10,000 euros on a painting now. Or 20,000 euros in a paint, you know, like, but would they drop 300 euros? Yeah, I reckon. 400 euros. Mm-hmm.
Also, if they can get hold of those works, then I mean, because shipping a large painting is complex and complicated, and also pretty expensive.
Yeah,
and probably something that is more difficult now than sending a roll with papers, with drawings in there or smaller packages. You know.
Yeah, I mean, thinking it's about fast. Things. It's cost effective. As I said, it's for me. It's a model. For the interim, that everybody wins, mm-hmm. you know, that everyone can get some value out of. So, we'll be doing that and working with galleries to see what, you know, make sure we can keep as many doors open as we can, The staffing thing sucked because, you know, if the gallery is not operational and they've got two or three staff and it's not even open, I mean, how long can they afford to keep the staff on? I'd say, what, 2 weeks tops, you know, maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, I mean, most galleries have very, very few staff in the first place. I mean, most of the galleries, the mid-level galleries are, you know, sort of owner-run places that sometimes have one or two employees. I mean, before 2008, around that time, I had like, I think, 7 or 8 people working for Helium Cowboy. Yeah. You know, that was good times, you know, in terms also that, you know, sort of, you can do so much then, you know, you can do so many, you can do good shows, you can do catalogs, you can do real PR, you have, you know, so we had all these crazy things, all these shows that we did, all the fairs that we did, and that was only possible because there are so many people that, you know, and then like 2 years later, I was alone,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But there's also, you know, it's funny you say that, there's also a level of freedom in that as well. I mean, that's also,
yeah,
it's just bringing back to grassroots and just doing your own thing, which I think is also quite lovely.
I think it's not about, I think we are working in a business. I mean, when you're an artist, you're not necessarily in a business. You're an artist, you create work, you know, sort of their business aspect is, you know, sort of not necessarily in your responsibility. But if you're a gallery, we're working in a luxury segment in a way, you know, so that is right now, it's not very important to most people to spend their money on new paintings and new work. So yeah. I think what we have to look into is like, how do we, you know, sort of probably entertain people in a way, you know, like you see this online a lot. I mean, probably, I don't know, with you guys, your I mean, all our internet behavior has probably changed. We're spending more time on Instagram and social media than before. I mean, most people do, I'm pretty sure, and have time to look at things. I mean, I see it also as a responsibility, if it's a gallery or as an artist, not as a responsibility, but something that nice that we can do is like when we try to engage with people out there who probably just, you know, starting to get super bored at some time, and you know, maybe you have more time to look at things.
I was chatting to a mate last night, and he was, you know, we're talking about actual value of works on paper, because he said, you know, do you think if someone offers me £400, £500 for a drawing, but I know it's £1,000 drawing, should I take it? And I said, any day of the week, you know, of course you have to. You got a responsibility to yourself. He says, yeah, but isn't that going to destroy my future market value? And then. And then we had this really interesting, you know, discussion around economics around, you know, right now though, mate, there's no guarantee there is going to be a market, you know, in 12 months and 24 months. And there's no guarantee that, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks time, you will be able to put food on your table. So therefore, you got to do what you got to do to survive. And that's the sort of same mentality. I think, you know, the small to medium sized galleries need to take on as well. Is just keep things moving. Find a way to work with artists. Yes, you know, because as I said, I don't. For some people, €300 every 2 or 3 months is not gonna hurt them dramatically at the moment, and they can buy a drawing or work on paper, and they'll probably get it much cheaper than it otherwise would be anyway. So there is some sort of sense of a win, you know. But yeah, trying to sell big paintings, trying to push work that you would usually be a focus. I think it's a bit of a waste of time at the moment.
Yeah, not only the cost of them, but I think you rely on like physically seeing those bigger ones at scale to get that impact. Right?
No one says, some people do, but. If someone's gonna pay a lot of money for a big work, usually they want to see it, rightfully so. Because it's such a global market now, everything we make is here. Everything we've made for shows is not going to be sent because it costs too much to sit in somewhere that probably isn't even going to be open. So it's I think everyone has to sort of reconsider and rethink how they do work, because I know for a fact I don't want to go and send 20 paintings out this week because it's going to cost a small fortune, of which you don't know when you're going to get that money back, if you'll get that money back at all. So consumerism sort of needs to change a little bit, I think, expectation, but also artists thinking about being, you know, and some, there's no right or wrong in this, but some, you know, value their work at X amount and that's what they sell, and they're not going to prepare to budge on that dollar value. Whereas I think in a time like this, you need to be far more fluid. You know, you need to be prepared to move on that, because the market value of work at the moment probably isn't very high in general. Everybody's personal.
I also don't think it's going to be judged upon what happened in these months. You know, I mean, I mean, there are people that are speculating on art, and but it's not necessarily, I think we're not at that point yet in our careers that where we say, okay, you know, sort of it's a gamble, you know. It might be some people, you know, especially probably with your work now, Jordi, but I think for most artists this does not apply, you know. So if you go in these times and you have somebody who's offering you good coin for a work on paper or a different kind of work, or you work in general, just I think it's also okay to not talk about that, you know. I mean, just do it, you know.
Everybody's gonna survive, everyone's gonna find a way to keep moving. And it's also funny, but what, you know, what I've learned the last 3 weeks is that even at a time where shit hits the fan and everything's gone to hell, people still want art, and people still like that makes them feel better. You know, it does make them feel better. So making stuff, I think, is important, irrespective of whether people buy it or not, or just see it on Instagram or, you know, on the internet somewhere. If that helps them for two or 3 seconds a day, just having a look and makes them smile, it's probably worth it.
I had a collector pass on a really nice message the other day that bought a work from my show, who said it was basically a memento from this time to really remember. You know, what's happened, and about, you know, community and society, and more love and kindness. It was the "and more peace." I thought it was lovely.
Yeah, I think it's also probably, it's also keeping, it's true. It's kind of, it's not necessary, you know, souvenir is probably the wrong word, but I'm not a native speaker, so I'm just using that. But if you look at this time and you have the opportunity to buy from a show that's not really an exhibition, like your exhibition now in Sydney, you know, I mean, there's not many people that will actually be able to visit it, you know, sort of in person, experiences in person, but having a piece from that time from one of these exhibitions, I mean, primary motivation to buy a piece of work should always be that you really want it and that you really like it, you know. But if you find something that you like right now and you buy it from one of these ghost shows, that's also like that. very unique. But your work is usually large format, right? Or larger format, Rachel?
Mine?
Yeah, or is it also small format?
Both. I think my favorite size is 120 by 160 centimeters.
Yeah, well, that's big, yeah.
But I also do a lot of 60 by 75s.
Yeah.
That's generally the smallest I'll go, except for now with the paperwork, so I'm going smaller.
Yeah. I mean, when the markets went to shit back in 2008, we did a lot of shows afterwards with works on paper too. Like when I still had these art fairs that we were going to in 2009, I went with John Bergerman to New York, and we had our plan was to do everything on location. So we didn't bring anything except for our computers, and we built from wood we found and we stole from the fairgrounds and stuff. Like we built a lab situation, like it was called Lossy Data Lab, and it was very comical. It was very funny. We were 5 days. We were in character, so to say, like making research. And John was creating all these paperworks. And in the end, these paperworks paid for our costs that we had, because we would have had to do the fair anyway, or cancel it and pay a fine of what, $10,000, $15,000. Yeah. So, and that was a good idea to do it. And then the next year we did a show at the Volta in New York with Boris, and same thing. We just agreed on doing paperwork, and he did two punching bag installations that he put in his luggage, but we didn't ship anything. So like one thing is to think about these times is think about the shipping aspect. How does get work? How does work get from one point to another point? And as I said, you know, small packages, rolls, fabric or whatever that you can send, you know, don't think about framing now.
I think the show that I've got in Sydney, I think that was the first time possibly they just went unframed. You know, we're just kind of cutting out any additional costs that were unnecessary. Mm-hmm. So,
All right. guys, I don't want to keep you much longer. I mean, you have your free time now with the kids in bed, finally.
I had a, because it's daylight savings now, which we didn't realize, actually.
No idea. Every day is the same.
Yeah, every day, it doesn't matter, mate. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could have done this in 3 hours. It would have been the same thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
You still know what day it is?
You still know? I had to think about it this morning, and I was, yeah, it's Sunday, so we know that much, but. Yeah, I mean, tomorrow we'll be doing much the same, the day after and the day after that. But yeah, so yeah, it's good. We actually brought our dogs over from Australia, so that's been a godsend, actually. Our little, we've got miniature schnauzers, little German dogs, and it's been good having them here because they kind of keep you company and sane as well, and a good excuse to get out and walk them too. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, guys. Thank you. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Thank you so much for having us. Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, George.
Well, thank you for listening today. I will be back with more talks shortly. If you have any questions for me or my guests, I'm happy to hear them all. Just send me a mail to hello@heliumtalk.com or a direct message on my Instagram @heliumcowboy. Stay safe and healthy and take good care of everyone around you.
Helium Talk.